Hello and welcome to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today we have a special guest, Senator Steve Glaser, joining us today. Senator Glaser, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Nice to be a part of your show.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on. Senator Glaser, kind of one thing I wanted to talk to you at first is kind of, I guess, you know, we're in a new situation here where we've opened the economy and now we're starting to kind of scale it back in terms of COVID-19. Recently, you know, you came out with a well-written op-ed on the topic, published in the SACB. Can you kind of, I guess, tell us about your op-ed and kind of explain kind of your thoughts on the issue of the economy reopening and where we are right now?
Well, let me first say that I think Governor Newsom has done a very good job in leading us through this pandemic. It's obviously unprecedented in our lifetime, and it's a very challenging situation for everybody, all of our residents, and our state and community leaders as well. And I really think that in so many ways he has led the way in a very positive fashion. You know, we were the first state in the country to issue shelter in place orders on the 19th of March. 3 days earlier, he had established those same orders for anybody that's over the age of 65 who have underlying medical conditions. That order is still in effect today. And all the programs, many of the programs that he has advanced in his governorship, whether it's the dealing with the homeless and trying to get them off the streets, whether it's delivering hot meals to seniors who are sheltering in place at home, there are so many things that he and his administration have undertaken in a very positive, productive way to try to help our state get through this circumstance. So, at the start, at least, the foundation for my comments, and they're meant to be constructive comments, I wanted to say that I think that Governor Newsom has done a very good job. Now, I have written in the last few months about blind spots that I see in the state's response to the COVID-19 virus, and that was reflected partly in the opinion piece in the Sacramento Bee, and also in other publications where my pieces have been published. But basically, it comes down to a couple main questions that are still unanswered. And by the way, we have more infections today than we did when we went into shelter in place in March. Right. There are more people. Obviously, the hospitalization rates, everything is massively larger than it was when we went into shelter in place. And so the questions that I have asked as we have reopened have been around the issue of what do we know or don't know at this point in time. And here's what I think we don't know. We don't know really how many people are infected. The only tests that are done are the tests that people volunteer to do. You think you might not be feeling well or you're worried about your health condition, you go out and get a test. So the government has taken a factor of those voluntary tests, called it a positivity rate, and they use that now to gauge infection spread. It's not a legitimate standard. So if you were doing real community surveillance, you wouldn't rely upon a choice that you would make to get tested. We would go out into the community in a random way and get a better sense of where we stand. So on the first issue of where we're blind is on testing and infection rates. And then the second area that we're blind on, and it's particularly important, is the spread. Where is it coming from? At this point in time, no one really knows why after 60, 90 days of shelter in place before we reopened, why was the curve not flat? It only bent to a high plateau. It never was on the decline. So the question is, after all that sheltering in place, why were people still being infected? And to this date, we don't know the answer to that. We have hotspots at nursing homes. We have a hotspot at a prison. We have a hotspot at a meat packing plant. But so those two main questions are serious foundational questions to how to reopen safely. And that's why I've been critical of the moves that have been made to reopen too soon.
You know, your Senate district encompasses Alameda County. Alameda County has obviously been a lot more conservative in reopening the county for business, the economy. In talking with your, I guess, local health officials, I guess, what are they seeing in Alameda County that has, I guess, led them to be more cautious than some of these neighboring counties?
Well, they were more cautious at the beginning, but that has changed. So at the beginning, it was the Bay Area counties and their public health officers talking to each other that determined that they wanted to decide to shelter in place in an orderly way in collaboration with each county. And that's what they did. before the state order to shelter in place, the six Bay Area counties had already agreed and had instituted a shelter in place order. So that was an example of where they saw the same things everybody else was seeing and decided they needed to act and have people staying in their homes until they could figure out how to stem the spread of the virus. But where that has changed over this the last few months is that as the state has issued guidelines on what would be considered a safe reopening, the counties have started to defer to the state. And so as Gavin Newsom, as the governor, has issued guidelines implying that it was safe to open up outdoor restaurants or takeout food or, as he's relaxed the orders in various ways, the county, rather than determining what they thought was best for them, have started to defer to the state and said, well, if the state's going to give guidelines and all they require is that we attest to following those guidelines, then the state's given them permission to open up more and more. So that's actually caused a spike now in Contra Costa County and Alameda County. The infection rates have spiked again. Hospitalization rates are going up, and they're back on the state watch list. So it has varied from the state. The Bay Area counties being more conservative and careful and acting sooner, and now it deferred to a place where relying more on the state judgments. And now the state's ratcheting it back, and that by definition will now start happening in the Bay Area. They will start ratcheting it back.
And it's kind of interesting. If we would have said, in March, we're going to shut down for a short period of time, and we're going to reopen, when it's safe again, it was kind of thought of a worst case scenario to have to shut everything down again. But it kind of looks like, that's where we're headed. Restaurants, bars, kind of movie theaters, family entertainment centers, card rooms have been shut down. But it's one thing you noted is, what about these other businesses like gyms, like, a group fitness class? Like, what's the difference between doing a group fitness class or going to a restaurant? I think that's something you raised. Can you explain kind of your thoughts on why certain businesses are being closed and others aren't?
Well, I think that has added to the confusion right now is that and as the governor rolls it back, he's ending in these watch counties indoor dining, but still allowing indoor gyms. So there's some questions as to some consistency in these orders. But look, the big picture, here's the big picture. We opened too fast. The infection rate had never bent or flattened at all in California. In fact, when new guidance was allowed for what was called stage two reopening on May 8th, we were at 4,000 hospitalizations and we'd been there for 4 weeks, the same level. So there was no bending of the curve down. And as the state has opened up, there's only one way for it to go, and that's back up. And that's exactly what's happened. And the challenge now, and in some areas of the state, it's out of control. Infection rates are going up dramatically. Right. Hospital rooms are filling up. ICU beds in the Inland Empire filling up quickly. And they estimate now that within 2 weeks in Los Angeles, the hospitals may be overflowing, which then will affect every place else in the state. And so the question now is, what does the governor do in this circumstance where we've now lost control of the virus? All the progress we made when we sheltered in place in March is now evaporated. And now what do we do to try to control that pandemic in our state? And look, there's a lot of people on the economic side that have been incredibly hurt by it, right? You mentioned card rooms and certainly restaurants and gyms and all the rest. And all I can tell you is that until we get the health effects under control, the economy will never be put under control again or back on its feet again. So we have to take care of the underlying health issue first. And it's going to require now the governor to exert some leadership. And I talk about command and control because he's deferred a lot of these judgments to the local officials, to the counties. And he said, I'll put out guidance on the state side, but the counties are the ones who really have to enforce it. And what my opinion piece talked about, and I feel quite strongly about, is that in a pandemic like this, you can't just defer some of these decisions to local governments. That if Los Angeles makes a decision about what can open or not open, and you can get on the freeway for 2 minutes and get to another county, and they have a completely different rules on hairdressing or restaurants or whatever the business is, that's not going to control the spread. And so we need a coordinated state responsibility by the governor. And so the big picture is we need a reset again. This is hard to hear, but we actually have to reset ourselves back to where we were in March so that we shelter in place in a more responsible way and hope that we can really curb the spread of this virus and actually have it flatten that curve so that we can reopen more safely than we did the last time around.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point you brought up, you know, in regards of the different sectors, about basically the counties probably don't know the various types of businesses within their sectors or how they operate or how they operate safely. So it'd be only natural for them, I guess, to defer to the state. Something we saw also were mask orders, right? Some counties had mask orders, some counties didn't. And exactly just how you described, people would go from one county to another, wouldn't be wearing masks. And, you know, finally the governor put in the statewide mask order. So I think that's kind of just one example of how, I guess, you know, incrementally the state is taking control. I guess, what are some other areas where you think the state should take control of and, I guess, create some statewide guidelines?
I'll give you another example as how we deal with the elderly and those with underlying medical vulnerabilities. When the governor created a shelter in place for that community back in early March, that order remains in effect. But if you asked an elderly person today on the street, hey, is it okay for you to go to a restaurant if you eat outside? Is it okay for you to go to that retail establishment? Many of them will say, yeah, that they've in our county, it's been opened up, and so we are able to go. But the truth of the matter is, if you are 65 plus, the order is you cannot leave your home right now unless it's for a necessity, food or medicine, or go to a serious doctor's appointment. But nobody knows that's the rule today. When you go out, when you go to a retail establishment that allows the public to enter, it may have a warning about masks are required, 6 feet of physical distancing requirement. But on none of those notices is there a requirement that says if you're 65 plus, this business is not open to you. So that's an example where there is a state order that's not being enforced anywhere in most places in California. And the reason it's so important, it's why the governor isolated or identified age and vulnerability as a critical issue, because that's where the death rate is. That's the high mortality rate. The older you are, the more likely you're going to be affected by this virus with fatal results. And yet we've lost that statewide guidance and enforcement on the elderly and medically vulnerable. So that's another example where I think the governor's leadership is needed in this area. And they can't just rely upon the counties to decide what they want to say or not to say. And yet that really has been lost. That may even be a surprise to you that an older person isn't even allowed to go and do takeout at a restaurant.
You know, that is quite interesting, because you do see, I guess, a lot of older people going out and dining in on restaurants. You know, maybe a lot of them felt isolated and kind of everyone felt, oh, you know, businesses are open again. It's okay for us to go out. Kind of, right. I guess, which brings me to my next question is, I guess, you know, being a former communications expert and kind of, you know, working in this business a long time, is there a lack of education out there, a lack of communication? I guess, you know, why aren't people, you know, following these guidelines?
Well, first, this is a new thing for everybody. So we don't have, like, we haven't grown up where your mom and dad said, don't forget to put your mask on when you leave the house. So a lot of the requirements that have been put upon us, shelter in place and how we conduct ourselves in public, have not been something that we've learned over time since, you know, you were in kindergarten. Right. So these are all new learned skills that we have to figure out on our own, and they're easy to make mistakes. They really are easy. I mean, look, I'll give you an example. If you're crossing a street, what do? Your mom and dad says you look to the left, you look to the right before you cross, right? And you cross at a corner. So why is it in so many places in California do we have neon signs that say walk or don't walk? You have to press a button. Well, wait, we all know you can't cross the street with it. You have to, if you're going to be safe, you got to look both ways. Well, it's a reminder, because even though we know about how to cross the street or we've been taught, we still need reminders because we make mistakes. And that's the same thing we're going through now with COVID-19. We haven't been through a pandemic before. Masks are not a part of our culture in America, luckily. But now it has to be for at least a while into the future. And so these things take a while to learn. Even when the messages are flashing, don't walk, you still have to remember to put on the mask, you have to remember to create distancing. And how many times have you been out where you've seen other people around you maybe not behaving as you thought were appropriate. So this is something that takes a while. So are there things we can do in the communication side? Yes, absolutely. I think that there's been some challenges that the administration has had in communicating. But I also acknowledge that our own behavior really drives the results, and we're still learning how to behave. A criticism of the governor is the enforcement's efforts, that he has created no protocols to make sure that people are actually enforcing the rules. And he talked about that today in his press conference. So it's a communication, and it's an operational element, and it's a behavior, a learned behavior issue. And all those things together kind of is our future, is our destiny. And so far, we're not doing it too well.
Yeah. You know, in March, was it March 13th or 14th, you know, we got the shelter in place order, the Senate recess. And, you know, as the budget came around, the Senate came back. But, you know, I guess you were one of the members who haven't been back as frequently or haven't participated, you've been participating remotely. Can you kind of explain to us how, I guess, participating remotely for as a member of the Senate has been for you?
Well, it's not been satisfying, but it's first, the issue is health and safety. It's clear that indoors is more dangerous than outdoors. A lot of people indoors, more dangerous than a few people indoors. So the whole legislative environment of committee hearings and floor sessions put everybody at risk. And in fact, if you're over the age of 65, the order is, unless it's essential, you shouldn't even gather. Yet we have many senators and assembly members who are over the age of 65. So it is about, it's all the choices that you make, I make, are about managing risks now in the middle of this pandemic. And so for me, managing risks means to not participate in person unless it's absolutely important to do so. So they have arranged in the Senate for us to participate remotely, but we can't vote. So if we want to vote on legislation, we have to be present. I actually think that that is subject to interpretation. I don't think the law is clear on it. The Senate seems to be more open to the idea of remote voting. The Assembly is not. Right. Until they can change that, all of us legislators are under a lot of limitations that we have to be in the Capitol to actually cast a vote. But it does put all of us at risk. Look what's happened in the Assembly. And most people weren't really aware, but if you have a single member of the Senate or the Assembly that becomes infected during a legislature, it means that everybody has to be tested and quarantined for 14 days or longer. It shuts it down. The absence of an ability to remote vote means that, any chamber of the legislature gets shut down with a single infection, not just by a member, but by a staffer. And look what's just happened in the last day. We have a member of the Assembly who has now announced that they are infected with COVID-19. And it happened, it appears that it happened, on a day in which the entire Assembly was together. What's the result of that is that every member of the Assembly that was present that day is likely to have been tested. And it's likely that they'll find other members who have been infected. And depending on their age and their health, they could be in serious jeopardy. So it's managing risks, and it's also managing your responsibilities as a member of the legislature to participate. So that's what I've tried to do. I've been in the Capitol. Every time there's been a floor session, I have been present. Although that does put risks. And by the way, not just on you as an individual, but everybody in your household.
Right.
Everybody is at risk. And so the Assembly person who's been infected, their child has been infected. So, and anybody else that might be in that household could be infected. So it is about managing risks as a legislator, you in your own life, going to the market, going out for a walk. I mean, all of that creates risk. You obviously want to minimize it, but one of the things you definitely want to try to avoid is being in enclosed places with multiple people that are not in your household. And yet, when we assemble as the legislature, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, a member has tested positive. Some staff have tested positive. I think on Friday they announced a 2-week closure for the Capitol and the legislative office building. I guess, do you think the current protocols in place regarding members coming in and staff coming into the building are enough, or do you think more measures need to be taken?
Well, I think that the Secretary of the Senate and the Senate sergeants and the staff have done an exceptional job in trying to protect us and themselves and the staff from the virus. So I think the protocols have been conservatively drafted and implemented. And so my great praise for their leadership and the leadership of the pro tem of the Senate in trying to manage that. But if the requirement is that everybody, every senator has to be inside the room to vote, that creates risks to everybody. We've tried to minimize it by saying you can't have more than one staffer in the building if you need it. For me, 99% of the time, I have no staff in the building. I don't want to expose them to risks. Every member makes that choice for their staff. But that's something, unless you can allow remote voting, that's a risk that we have to take if we're going to manage our responsibilities as the Senate.
How have the last few months been for you, I guess, managing your staff remotely and kind of working, you know, with your district and helping your constituents?
Well, the demands have been greater than ever, and my staff have done a marvelous job all working from home for the most part to serve the district, to deal with the unemployment claims, the business closures. There's so many new issues that have come about because of this virus. One of the things that I initiated way back at the beginning of March was to do these telephone town halls, virtual town halls. We've done 19 of them on COVID, where I brought in experts from around the state in various subject areas, from what's happening to nursing homes, to the grocery store chain, to how to handle your pets, to mental illness, to schools, kids getting back to school. I've identified a lot of issues that the constituents are interested in. I've brought in experts where they can listen in or watch on the internet. And so we've spent a lot of time trying to push out information and experts so people could be as informed as possible in dealing with all this. And so it has created a lot of demand on everyone. I mean, I don't mind working from home. Zoom and so many other technologies has allowed us to do our work. But nothing replaces the shaking of hands and seeing people up front. And certainly the 4th of July parades is right. A sadness for all of us that we didn't get to participate in our community and a great celebration like Independence Day. So I think there's a mental strain on my team. I'm a sensitive to that, and I so appreciate that they're stepping up at a time of great crisis for so many.
You know, prior to the shutdown order, many members had, you know, many bills, and they were asked to pare their bill package down. In light of, you know, the coronavirus and having to pare your package down, I guess, what does your current bill package look like?
Well, I slimmed down to, I think, from 20 down to around 6 or 7. I tried to focus on issues that had great urgency to them. So the power shutoff, a problem that has occurred in the Bay Area, 3 bills dealing with that in terms of keeping cell towers going and hospital generators running and making sure people who have underlying health issues where if power goes out, their life is threatened. So I've tried to focus on issues that are very acute right now, and then pushed everything else to the side. And that's, I think, what many members of the Senate have done. So the bill load was reduced substantially. And that's just part of having to deal with this pandemic. You know, you can't do everything you want to do. It's most sad and for those who are serving their last year in the legislature. This was their last chance to advance bills important to them. And so they're particularly affected by what's going on. For me, hopefully I'll be reelected this year, and I have time to kind of advance some other issues that I care a lot about.
That's an interesting thing with the blackouts that we experienced last year with PG&E. While sheltering in place, you know, at my home, the power went out for a day, and I just thought, wow, I couldn't imagine if we're going to have these PG&E blackouts later this year. Can you elaborate on your legislation and how, I guess, those can be prevented this year so we won't be stuck at home and working at home and not having any power?
Well, it's a bummer in a lot of ways. And look, it's not just about your food in the refrigerator spoiling, right? That's a bummer and it's costly. But if you have an electric wheelchair and you can't power it, or if you have a breathing apparatus that requires power for you to breathe, or a heart for your heart to pump, dialysis, so your liver functions are taken care of. There are so many people who are dependent upon power for life. And because the PSPS, the power shutoff, public safety power shutoffs are so new that the utility companies are implementing them, PG&E is implementing them because they're concerned that they haven't hardened the system to protect against a wind-driven wildfire. that they've created these PSPS events. And we had more than 8 days in parts of my district where they shut the power off. Done. So it's put a lot of people at great risk, and not just a health risk, but the risk of being able to call out for help. If these cell towers go down and you can't call out for help, that's a problem. And if you can't receive a notification that says evacuate, that's a serious issue too. So these power shutoffs have created a lot of cascading problems throughout Northern California. And along with Senator McGuire, Senator Dodd, we put together a package of bills to try to give the public a fighting chance in these circumstances, to require the electrical companies, if they're going to have power shutoffs, and you got to make sure you're caring for the most vulnerable. And if you're going to, if the telecommunications industry can't keep cell towers running, then they've got to have the notification and they've got to have the backup power so people can get notifications and can do something in the event of an emergency. So they've been focused on how to deal with what we hope will be a temporary situation. We need PG&E to be more responsible, to harden their system. And then these wind events won't be events anymore. It'll be like the old days where it wouldn't create a fire. Right. But because of the deterioration of their system, and because we now know that it has created massive wildfire and wildfire risks, that now we have to deal with the new reality, like the pandemic. And we have to say, okay, in these circumstances, how can we be safer? How can we ensure our constituents will be safer? And that's the driver behind those series of bills that are still moving in the Senate.
Earlier you were talking about your teletown halls, how you've had these local experts come in and kind of educate the public about kind of different issues they're interested in. I guess kind of one topic that we keep hearing about is, you know, schools starting in the fall or late summer. You know, here we are in the beginning of July, and we're all wondering what's the reality of school starting in the fall and kind of being back to normal. Kind of, I guess, your thoughts and kind of what experts have been telling you about the chances of school starting in the fall.
Well, of course, the best solution to that is to get a control of the virus. And I'm hoping that under the reset, Gavin Newsom will chart a course that will better able the state to withstand the virus and the reopenings, including schools. And that's the foundational issue. Can we do this better and smarter? And I think there's a lot of troubling signs ahead that it's going to, that rather than having the economy open up, it's the opposite that's going to happen over the next few weeks, is we're going to start to close down more and more. And it's likely to have a significant impact on our schools. And we know that if we can't get our kids back in school, people, or a lot of people, they can't go to work, right? Even if the economy was opening up. So this is a horrendous consequence of the virus. I don't know. I don't have an answer about how the schools are going to do it. I know we have such incredible education leaders and teachers and staff that are just working so hard to try to figure out how to do it safely. And I think, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if they know what the answer is yet. And part of it's because of the blind spots of the virus itself. How easily is it transmitted through kids? We know that it's very likely that the reason that we've not been able to take control of it is because people are living in crowded conditions, where in small spaces you have multiple, you know, you have family units of small kids, old, elderly folks. And that's a big part of the spread, is those tight living conditions. So is it the issue of where the kids can bring it home to get the parents infected, the grandparents infected, or is it the opposite, that the transmission of it goes the opposite way from a parent to a child and then a child to another child? I mean, there's a lot that we don't know. And so I know that our education community is working really hard to figure it out. And I don't know if they're going to have it figured out by the time kids have to go back to school. So parents are going to have to make that tough choice of, do we want to pull our kids out? And do we think that if we do send our kids, is it going to be safe for everybody in the household? And certainly from the staff's perspective in the schools, as a teacher standing in front of that room, even if it's for just a couple hours a day, are they safe? And are their families safe? So we are in a heck of a big hurt. Right. And on the economy, on our schools, and we have to... And look, at the heart of it is that we're not able to tame this virus. And so these are the consequences. So when we talk about wearing face coverings and physically distancing and washing our hands and all those safe elements. You know, we failed the exam. We talk about school, all right? So, you know, there's criticism of leadership, but it's the best of intentions, good leadership. That's it, trying to figure things out. But at the end of the day, it was our behavior. And I guess we get an F. That for many, they did the right thing. But for us as a state, we weren't able to get over the bar. And so we're going to have to go backwards and see if we can do it right the next go around. So we have a makeup test over the next few weeks, and we'll see how we do. And that will determine whether our kids can get back to school, learn, and have real tests that help them achieve all they want to achieve in their lives.
Right. I guess as a father yourself, on a personal note, I guess how are your children dealing with this COVID-19 shelter in place order? And how is it, I guess, affecting them and your family?
Well, I have an older daughter in New York, so she's been hunkered down for many months there as they've gone through the whole COVID-19 crisis back there. And I have another daughter who's finishing up law school. She finished it up at home, remotely learning, and now remotely studying for the bar. So, you know, for them, their circumstances could be a lot worse, but they're healthy and safe. And you know, we'll look back, hopefully, in different ways about how our lives were affected and changed by this virus. But I've had a couple months of having my youngest daughter at home, which has been a wonderful joy in the midst of all this out there.
Have they released how they're going to, I guess, examine or give the bar exam?
No, they haven't decided that yet. And she's on pins and needles to wait and see what the Supreme Court's going to decide about all the young lawyers and whether or not they can get that licensure, which makes a huge difference in their future. Right. So that's just another challenging time ahead for different parts of our world and all the law school students trying to figure out their way through it.
Yeah, I remember myself, you know, taking that, I think it's at the end of July, they give the test, a big room with hundreds of people in it, probably not the safest environment. So hopefully they can figure that out. So,
well, they've talked about a remote bar. They've talked about, you know, where you take it on your own and your own space. In some states, Oregon and Washington, they determined to certify the graduates as lawyers, that under certain standards and parameters, they can now be employed in their states as full lawyers without the bar being a requirement. So every state's kind of deciding for themselves how they're going to handle it. And it's a big choice. It affects a lot of people. And you know how stressful that time was.
Right.
Studying for the bar, let alone taking the bar. And in most cases, a lot of times it's because they have a career path that's already set that can get taken away from them, depending on this choice. So that's for the young lawyers out there, for all kids in college, that their whole experience is being turned upside down. And I hope we can get through this as soon as possible so they can get their lives back together, because I know how stressful it is for them and for all of us.
Definitely. Well, Senator Glaser, thank you so much for joining us. I guess any imparting words for us before we go?
Well, I think the way out of this at the end of the day is our ability to track, trace, and quarantine people so that the infection rates can go down and we can actually flatten the curve. And that is going to be based on our behavior and the ability to be attentive to how we can keep our world safe and clean. And as I said earlier, it's a learned behavior, not easy to do. We all make mistakes within it. But that it really is our behavior really will decide how quickly we can get out of this, both from a health point of view and from an economic point of view. So I want to wish all your viewers safe travels, so hopefully only in their neighborhood. And I know that we'll get through this, but we have some tough times still ahead. So thank you for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Definitely. Thank you, Senator. Well said.
Thank you. Our cold dreamers. Wow.